So there we are. I mean, what have we got? That reading from Genesis 30, 25, 43. I heard Gene read to us earlier. We join Jacob, having worked for his uncle Laban for 14 years. He's got 11 sons and some daughters, and he's really keen to be heading back home to Canaan. So he comes to an agreement with his father-in-law, Laban. But true to form, Laban, who's a really deceitful character, tries to trick him. So that's the story. But actually, it is the story behind the story that is really the key here. Because it's that story that is the story of God's providing, God's providence, as we would call it. You see, even though Jacob is a really smart shepherd, by the time we get to the end of our reading, we can't miss the fact that all of that thriving and blessing and doing really well comes in Jacob's direction, but not because of Jacob. It comes his way because it's God's blessing. It's all down to God. And Jacob gives us a couple of clues along the way that he sees it that way, doesn't he? Let's take a look at the passage. And as we do, we're going to look at it in five very short sections. And the first one is Jacob asks to leave. First thing we see is in verses 25 and 26. I think it's a bit curious, actually, because we find that Jacob is prepared to leave with nothing. I don't know whether you notice that. See that? He asks Laban for nothing. He says, send me away that I may go to my home country, home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I've served you that I may go. That's it. He doesn't ask for anything else. He doesn't ask for a single goat. Simply to go home, because he's finished his 14-year contract. Clearly, Jacob wants to make sure that there is no way Laban can say, well, he's only got that because I gave it to him. He's only got that because I made him rich. No claim can be made on Jacob's richness, his wealth. Is God stirring Jacob to remember his blessing? That's a question I was asking myself when looking at this. To remember that the importance of the promised land. A few weeks back we saw that blessing that Jacob had, that conversation he had with God. You see, Jacob is starting to remember the importance of his role as the heir of that blessing and covenant. So after all these years serving his dodgy uncle in a foreign land, Jacob knows it's time to be going back to the land of promise. See, I don't believe that Jacob is just wanting to escape his deceitful uncle and father-in-law Laban. I'm sure he is wanting to do that. Or that he's missing his old mum and dad. I'm sure he's missing them as well. But here we can see God stirring him into action to pick up what will become a really crucial role as we go on. And we'll see in this covenant, this agreement that God has had with Jacob. In fact, with Jacob's granddad, Abraham. And passed down to his dad, Isaac. Now it's Jacob's job. Well, Moses, in writing this account, because it's Moses who wrote all of this stuff that we're reading, he wants us to notice what God is doing in awakening Jacob. It's an awareness that the God has been preparing him for that inherited role that he's got. As head of the household, he's going to be the boss. He's got a job to do. I'll enlarge on that a bit more as we go on. But for now, let's just at least notice that Jacob is willing to leave empty-handed so he can get back home. But what do we find next? Well, we find next that Laban says, oh, well, yeah, but hang on. Hang around a bit, matey, won't you? Laban isn't quite so keen, is he, for Jacob to be going? Look at verses 27 and 28. And you'll see that there is clearly no emotional tie here. You know, he's not blubbing and feeling, oh, don't go, Jacob. Doesn't care. Doesn't love him that much, if at all. He's not bothered about his son-in-law. He's probably not actually that bothered about his daughter and his family's daughters and family leaving to start a new life. There don't appear to be any tears in Laban's eyes here. Even if there are, it's only because he's losing cash. You see, Jacob has made Laban a very, very rich man. And that's why he hates the thought of Jacob leaving, because he wants to get richer. So he tries to get Jacob to stay. And don't miss the way that Moses is making a deliberate point here about showing us two things. First, that God has blessed Jacob, who's he promised to bless, and that even the cheating, deceitful, creepy old Laban appreciates the fact that the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has also blessed him because of Jacob. He gets blessed as well. Look at verse 27. I have learned by divination. We'll talk about that in a minute. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Laban is a deceitful bloke, but he's not stupid. He can see that the blessing is because God is blessing Jacob. So he gets blessed as a byproduct. Now, what did Laban mean by that phrase, I've learned by divination? Well, it's not completely clear, to be honest. It's often used as a kind of superstitious or occult or witchcraft thing, but it can also be used in other ways. Here it could may simply mean that he's seen what has happened. He's seen the evidence that God has been blessing Jacob, and as a result he's been blessed. Whatever way it is meant, it actually does give us a bit of a pointer a bit later on to some occult developments, as it were, in Jacob's story, where we find that idol worship and superstition a part of Laban's family, and it all comes to light in a few chapters' time, but we'll deal with that then. Anyhow, Laban offers Jacob a deal, and it seems that Jacob is not terribly keen on doing a deal with Laban. No doubt that's partly due to Laban's cheating past, but also it'll have something to do with Jacob waking up to the fact that God is saying, no, I want you to do this. This is what I want you to do. It's time to go now, Jacob. So that brings us neatly onto verses 29 to 33, where we find that Jacob gives Laban a bit of a ticking off because of the way he's been treated. Instead of directly answering Laban's question, you know, what do you want for your wages? He says, well, actually, I don't want paying. No, I don't want paying. I suggest we take a different approach. Here's my deal. So Jacob starts a bit of negotiation with Laban. And Jacob's a good negotiator. His plan is clever, because it sounds like Laban is getting a better part of the deal. Because, you know, the white wool was worth more. They were considered more valuable. So having the kind of dodgy sheep, well, yeah, let him have those. That's all right. They're still worth something, though. But I wonder if when Jean read through the passage, you notice that whilst Jacob reminds Laban of how hard he worked for him and how much better off Laban is as a result, what he doesn't do is say, it's all because of me. Did you notice that? It's all because I worked really hard. I did a great job. Well, he did. But actually, he says, look at verse 30. I'll read it. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. Striking, I think. Jacob has clearly seen God working in his life. Has he been weak? Has he got things wrong? Yeah, he's definitely screwed up all over the place. He's human, he will have done. Absolutely he has. But his life is something, when he looks at it, he can see in his life God has been moving, he's been doing things. In his life, God has been teaching him. In his life, God has been changing him. It's a fact. Now, if you're a Christian here today, I just want to ask you this. If you're not a Christian, you don't need to worry too much about this question, but there'll be other questions. If you're a Christian, let me ask you, is that your situation, the same situation that Jacob's in? I ask because it should be the same situation for everybody who's a believer. As a believer, I have been weak. I've messed things up. I've screwed up all over the place. I've got things wrong. And if you're a believer, that will be exactly the same thing for you too. But here's the incredible thing. As we look back across our lives, like Jacob, we too will have seen God doing things. We'll have seen his hand in our lives. You too will see in your life that God has been moving. In your life, God has been teaching you. In your life, God has been changing you. He's been doing a lot more as well, but we haven't got time to go into that. But do you see the point? We should be able to see, we will be able to see. If we've got a faith, we will not be able to miss it. The things that God's doing, and it will be exciting. Anyhow, back to Jacob, and we see that Jacob has got a lot to learn. He has got a lot to learn in his walk with God, but he is clearly beginning to find that it's dawning on him how important God's blessing is. Jacob doesn't want to be in the position of being an employee, particularly of old Laban, tricky, deceitful Laban, but that's not just for financial reasons. It's for spiritual, godly reasons too. He wants to trust God first and put God first. So he puts forward a plan which he thinks Laban will run with, which he thinks he can make work. He agrees to take a quota of the flock, which was less attractive, speckled, spotted, the black sheep of the family, if you like. And now Uncle Laban would have liked the plan, obviously, because he will have seen small number of the flock were a bit dodgy and, well, doesn't matter so much. But as well as seeing it's going to be likely a popular idea for Laban, let's not miss too that Jacob teaches us a bit of a lesson about the theology of work. I mean, that's God's plan for work. What you and I might call a kind of Christian work ethic. Look at verse 29, you read, Jacob said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you, how your livestock have fared with me." He's underlining the fact that he's no slacker. Jacob is a hard-working bloke. He's worked hard for Laban. Think about it, Jacob could have come up with plenty of reasons to do the minimum. I mean, if you were here a few weeks back, you'll see he'd been tricked into a situation of having to work for a wife who he hadn't actually asked for. He didn't want the woman. Yet he works. He'd generally been given a really bad time by this bloke Laban. In fact, when we get to the next chapter, we see that Jacob is being pretty explicit with Laban about all of this bad treatment he's had. But despite all of that bad treatment, Jacob worked hard and he served well. There's another lesson for us here, because Jacob, in working faithfully and hard for his boss Laban, has set us a really great example. He no doubt had every motivation and excuse, as I said, to be lazy in his work. He could have had excuses, he could have made and just got away with the minimum. But he really did give it his best. And that's a good reminder for us to do the same thing. Both in the workplace and in our homes and in church. Whatever we're called to do, we are called to do, well, as Paul puts it in a letter to the Colossians, whatever you do, do it enthusiastically as something done for the Lord and not for men. So when you're doing stuff that you don't want to be doing, it's hard to do, your motivation is not because you've got to do it. It's because, well, okay, do it for God. You see, Jacob working hard and also giving the credit to the Lord for the blessing that comes. Just imagine the temptation he must have had. He must have had this temptation when he said, "Look, I've worked my fingers to the bone for you, matey. Come on, Laban, you know I've worked for you for years." But Jacob said something different. He says, "I've worked hard and the Lord has blessed you." Not, "I've worked my fingers to the bone and so you're rich." "I've worked hard and the Lord has blessed you." And in that, Jacob has learned two secrets of God's plan for work. God calls us to work hard because ultimately we work for him. Not for our boss or for others, but for him. So quite reasonably, God calls us to credit him for any profit or any goodness that comes from that work. Now, good old John Calvin, if you never heard of John Calvin, he's around about 400 years ago. He had something helpful to say on this, though, and I paraphrased his words a bit because it's in different language. But basically, he says this. "This passage teaches the doctrine of work in two ways. First, whatever I attempt or whatever I work at or apply my hands to, is my duty to desire God, to want God to bless me in doing it. I've got to go on doing it, working hard, and ask God to bless it so that it won't be a waste of time." So Calvin says our first job when it comes to the work thing, to doing things that we want to do, ask God to bless the task, whatever it is we're doing. Next, he said, "Then if I've gained anything from it, if I've earned anything from it, if things have gone really well because of it, then I should give praise to God for it." That's the second thing. Because without God's blessing, men and women can get up early, can work themselves really, really almost to death during the day, if you like, and achieve absolutely nothing. So says Calvin, first you've got to seek God's blessing on your work, and then when he blesses you, thank him, give him the glory, tell everybody else about it. That is what's called the Protestant work ethic, and Jacob gives a great example of it. So Jacob gives Laban this offer. Let's get back to that. And he can't refuse it. Verses 34 to 36, we see what does Laban do with it? Well, he responds, and he says, well, what's the first thing we see? The first thing we see is in verse 35. Laban is almost rubbing his hands with glee as he accepts that offer. It's no doubt he's got the best end of the bargain, but he's not just happy to have the best end of the bargain, is he? We see what happens next. He wants everything. And so we see cheating Laban roll out his cheating plan. We see that his plan has 3 points. Point one is in verse 35. But that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped, spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black. He took the lot that were supposed to be in Jacob's hands. First thing he does is to remove all that he had agreed Jacob could have. Let's remember, Jacob's words were basically, look, I'm an honest bloke. I'll go through your flocks and I'll remove the less good ones. I'll leave the good ones for you. So then you just come and check afterwards. But twisted, deceitful Laban, his father-in-law, doesn't wait a minute. It's the first thing you read, isn't it? The first thing he does, he's going, hide away. Those things he's agreed that Jacob can keep. That's the first point of his deceitful plan. The second point comes at the end of that verse when we read, and put them, that is the animals that he'd removed, in the charge of his sons. He's using Jacob's wife's brothers in the scheme to steal from them. The brothers are going to be hiding the stolen goods away on behalf of their dad. And then finally, the third point in his scheme, verse 36, we see point three. He set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. How far is a 3 days' journey? Well, with a flock of sheep, it's supposed to be kind of reckoned at around about 45 miles. That is a long distance to be away. So Laban decides to put a good distance between the animals he's depriving Jacob of and his own flock, which we read that Jacob is still left in charge of, looking after, for nothing. I mean, you've got to hand it to Laban, haven't you? When it comes to cunning, he's a master at it. We see that Jacob then begins his new independence with absolutely nothing. Not only nothing at all, but having to work still for nothing. Which brings us to our last verses, verses 37 to 43, where we see that despite Laban, God still blesses Jacob. And this is the weird bit, I think. This is a strange passage, isn't it? We read it whenever the animals are mating, you have them face striped branches and streaked and spotted animals turn up. I mean, what's going on here? Isn't this weird? It looked like Jacob believed that if an animal looked at these bits of wood, these bits of branch, then it would make them have animals themselves, babies that look like that. It looks like he's doing a bit of selective genetics, doesn't it? He only puts the sticks out when the strong animals are mating as well. So the strong animals went to Jacob and the weak ones went to Laban. But what is going on with this weirdness? Well, there have been plenty of discussions about what's going on here. And some have said, oh, well, Jacob was relying on superstition, on kind of stuffed old wives' tales to get himself a flock. Others have said, well, Jacob must have become such a great expert in sheep that he knew that this kind of had a special scientific fact behind it. Weird. Unlikely. There have been plenty of other thoughts too. But actually, we don't really need to get confused about it at all. There is nothing confusing about it. It's not confusing about it because we haven't read the next chapter. The oddness, we don't need to worry about. All we need to do is look at verses 8 to 13 in the next chapter, and we see that Jacob, in those verses, is trying to convince his wives that it's time for them to leave. He talks about his kind of flock-building scheme, and he says it like this: God has taken away your father's herd and given them to me. When the flocks were breeding, I saw in a dream that the streaked, spotted and speckled males were mating with females. In that dream, the angel of God said to me, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, look up and see. The males that are mating with the flock are streaked, spotted and speckled. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I've seen it. I'm the God of Bethel, where I blessed you. You poured oil on a stone marker and made a solemn vow to me. So you get up now and leave this land and return to your own native land. So what Jacob is saying here is that the idea about being paid with the odd animals was God's idea. God was the one making all of this happen. It seems that God told Jacob to do what he did. It's a bit like there's another account in the Bible. You might not be familiar with this, but I'll just tell about it briefly. In the book of Numbers, where there are lots of poisonous snakes that come along and they start killing people. Poisonous snakes tend to do that, apparently. Why are they doing it? Well, there's kind of killing for a rebellion. The people are doing things that God has said don't do, and they're ending up with these snakes coming and getting them. Probably because they're doing stuff in places where God says they shouldn't be. But this happens. And we read that Moses pleaded for the people of God. And God told Moses to make a bronze snake and put it on a pole, and that everybody who looked at it would be saved, which sounds a bit odd, doesn't it? Because you might start thinking, well, there's some kind of power in that bronze snake. No, that's not the point. The point's not that. There's no power in that snake at all. Just a bit of bronze. But to looking at the snake was a point of saying, I'm believing in God. Believing in God because God has said, if I do this, it shows that I'm trusting him, and in return, he'll save us. And they were all saved because of their faith, not because of the replica snake. And it seems a similar thing is happening here. There was nothing magic in striped sticks. There is nothing magic in striped sticks today. But Jacob acted in faith by doing what God had told him to do, no matter how silly it seemed. Sometimes God does seem to ask us things we think are silly, and they turn out to be the right things. God honoured Jacob's faithfulness, no matter how Laban had schemed against Jacob. Whatever happened, Jacob got richer. And Moses' main point here in telling us this is to show us how God blesses Jacob with the extraordinary wealth that he has. And it is an extraordinary wealth, really extraordinary. Verse 43. Thus the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants, male servants, camels and donkeys. I'm not going to get into camels and donkeys, but if you had camels, you were super rich. It's like having a couple of Rolls Royce on your drive. Camels, you're rich. So, look, says Moses, just notice when you're reading this, everybody, notice how God prospered Jacob. It was utterly, utterly extraordinary. Why was it that extraordinary? But because it's far more than Jacob had ever asked for. You don't need to turn back now, but a couple of weeks back, let me just read you the vow that Jacob made to God. It's recorded in Genesis 28, if you want to check it out later, verses 20 and 21. If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, that's what he asked for, so that I come again to my father's house, he asked for that as well, in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. That is what he asked for. He didn't ask for the fleet of Rolls Royce or camels. So when we read in verse 43 of chapter 30, we see that Moses wants us to see just how much God is teaching Jacob, that he alone is God's helper. When we trust God, he will bless us in ways that we would never have even asked for or imagined would be possible or know we needed. He's the source of blessing. And so we see God blesses Jacob far more abundantly than we might expect. It seems that what we see of Jacob in this account is that he was learning, and he was learning fast. Because when we look back at the earlier part of Jacob's life, he was a bit of a dodgy character himself. But bit by bit, God was doing things in his life. Now, wouldn't it be a great thing for us here today if we too were to learn that lesson of Jacob? A simple but crucial lesson. If only we would learn more and more the lesson that all the things and all the stuff that this world can give us all that which we can obtain, which we can get for our own efforts of working or doing this dodgy deal or that dodgy deal, or even just not dodgy deals. Whatever we go out for ourselves is so much less than what God offers his obedient sons and daughters. The stuff you can accumulate by borrowing money or any other way can never be satisfy you in the way that learning to be content in every circumstance will. The joy of a friendship rescued after a fallout is always going to be better than the horror of the feeling after you've had revenge on somebody because it leaves a sour taste. The promotion you could get if you sacrifice your family time or time in worship is going to be nothing compared to the situation, the satisfaction of knowing that you fought the good fight and you finished the course, you kept the faith, and all the way you enjoyed the life God had given you because he was with you. The compliments or applause that men and women can give is going to be nothing compared to what God says to you. What's he going to say to those who've been faithful? Well done. Well done. So why do we so often keep on doing it our way rather than trusting in God's way? Why do we so often ignore God's direction? Why do we so often ignore God's loving warnings? Why don't we do it God's way and trust that he speaks with a wisdom that will really amaze us? Honestly, I can't give you an answer to that. But what I can say is this. We all need to examine our hearts. Maybe you think that's a weird thing too. How do I examine my heart? Well, you know, just think about your life, but invite God into this. Well, how do I do that? I've never prayed before. Well, it's easy. Just ask him. Silently or loud as you like, but just in your heart. Just say, look, I don't know whether you're there, Lord, but if you are God and you do exist, just show me what's wrong with my life and what you want to put right with it. And help me to trust you. Help me to find out more about you. So that's the thing to do if you're not a Christian yet. But if you are a Christian, you will know what it's like to examine your heart because you'll do it regularly, because you'll be wanting to be in the right place. We need to do that. We need to examine ourselves and find out why we're kind of heading off in the wrong direction rather than the right direction. And we should all too be seeking to learn lessons, the lessons that Jacob learned. Because those lessons that he teaches in this section of his story are lessons that we need to learn regularly. Whatever your life's like at present, good, bad, or indifferent, Jacob here teaches us that God's blessing is in it. God wants to bless us. Do you know he blesses you even if you don't actually believe in him, that he even exists? Can you breathe at the moment? Yeah, you can because God's providing you the oxygen. Is there sunlight? Yeah. Move the earth about a meter in any direction. And, well, it's too hot or it's too cold. Everything perishes. We're blessed. God blesses us. But he wants us to be blessed truly by knowing him. Whatever your life is like at present, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, Jacob here is teaching us that God's blessing is in your life. He teaches us also to see God's leading in our lives, to see God's protection in our lives, and to be sure it with a real sense of peace and joy that we can have whatever we're going through in our lives. Let's pray. Lord, you know our lives, you know where we're at, you know whether we know you, how well we know you, what we're going through in personal things, what school or careers look like, what retirement looks like, what we're concerned about, what we are content with. Lord, I pray for those who don't know you at all, that you would break into their lives. For those who do know you, for those of us who do, Lord, help us to be more and more content in you and to see more of the way you do teach us. You do bless us. You do protect us. You provide us with so much. Help us to be thankful And help us, Lord, to be led by you, expecting you to do great things in our lives. Whether we think they are great in human terms, we know they'll be great in your terms. Lead us on, Lord, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.